Good afternoon. We'll call the Education Finance Committee to order. Today we're going to hear the Omnibus Education Policy Bill. And Representative Erickson, I see you're ready to go. Representative Christensen, would you mind moving the minutes from
Madam Chair, March 19th minute? I move the minutes.
Thank you. Any questions or discussion on the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Christensen. All right, and with that, Representative Erickson, why don't you go ahead and walk us through House File 1591.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Committee. I'd like to move House File 1591 to be considered for inclusion in an omnibus bill. First of all, I'd like to thank the members who are present here today on both sides of the aisle for helping create this omnibus bill. Of course, Chairwoman Loon and Representative Bennett, Representative Christensen, Representative Wills, and Representative Mariani, Representative Dabney, Representative Mullery, and Representative Seltzer. Those are members who are present today. Representative Precia a little bit, too, who have provisions in this, what I call innovative bill. We've tried to focus in policy on innovations. So we begin, members, with educator preparation, licensure, and accountability. And my intent with license and rules in Article 1 in regard to the MTLE or the equivalent ACT or SAT passing scores is to provide that option, but at the same time have the Board of Teaching set equivalent scores so that we're not having one that is more difficult than another when you think of the whole realm of an equivalent test that's going to be designed, whether it's, you know, like the MTLE or something else, you know, to focus on college level skills. In our teacher preparation, we have included an Erdahl bill for a year-long student teaching assignment. We've included a Barrett bill for best practices for suicide prevention when teachers are taking their continuing education and their staff development training. When we get to trying to encourage those candidates who are trained out of state or who have out of state licensures, we've tried to really streamline the process so that the Board of Teaching doesn't have barriers that prevent them now from welcoming those candidates who may want to teach in Minnesota and whom we welcome. And we think that by broadening this, going beyond the states that border Minnesota, that we can bring a more diverse population to our classrooms. So we look forward to having a discussion with the Board of Teaching in the future about how we can proceed with this kind of streamlining in welcoming with a bunch, not a bunch, with a variety of options for them to consider as they look at candidates who've been trained in other states or who are licensed in other states. Then Representative Erdahl and I collaborated in Section 2 of Article 1 on some accountability for our colleges, our schools of education, where we prepare our teachers with a reporting system that's going to provide data on websites so that anyone, but primarily those who are looking at going into the profession, can look at a summary, a list of summary data or a presentation of summary data on such things as what are the student entrance requirements included in enrolling them, the GPA, the average score, or on college-level skills exams, faculty qualifications, the average time a program graduates, a graduate needs to complete the preparation program. Some of that basic information that we think is important for future candidates or for the public to look at when they look at the variety of teacher preparation programs we have. Then my part of that was to direct school districts to provide information to the Board of Teaching. And all of this goes to the Board of Teaching, by the way. to the Board of Teaching on what is happening in regard to our teacher evaluation and whether or not a probationary teacher receives a contract or whether that probationary teacher or, in fact, probationary principal may, in fact, not be given a continuing contract. So we want that data collected and reported to the Board of Teaching as, again, a way to keep account of how well things are going when it comes to teacher evaluation and teacher performance. And this innovation that we created a few years ago that we think is really helping to prepare our students because of the quality of teachers we have in the classroom. Then also in Article 2, Representative Bennett's grounds for revocation, suspension, or denial is included. And then in Section 8, licensure by portfolio, I've always been disappointed that the department, or actually it's the Division of Licensing, did not take more seriously the fact that we have in law this opportunity for candidates to use a portfolio to become licensed. And yet it seems that they have ignored that, and so we have put in place what we think is probably a renewed message to them with some innovation for them to consider as they move forward with a portfolio process for licensure. And I think that's really exciting because I know that we have candidates out there who could submit the most fantastic portfolios you've ever seen to be presented to the Board of Teaching and the Licensure Division. Then we get into an exemption that was lifted. Retiring principals who are retired and who want to be short call substitute principals or assistant principals, their board would like them to continue with continuing education credits. Unlike the bill that I had a few years ago that allowed retired teachers who were on short term to forego that requirement. But it's good to know that the Board of School Administrators believes that it's so important that principals stay current that they want them to continue to receive continuing education. And I think that's a good move. In Section 10, another innovation is allowing both a nonprofit corporation organized with a teacher training institution, such as a college or a university, or one that is in collaboration with an educated-related purpose after they've consulted with a college of education to offer a way for teachers to be trained and ultimately receive a license. And that's an innovation that I certainly look forward to its fruition. If it can go forward, I think that would be another avenue, another pathway to bring our potential teacher candidates into our classrooms. Then we have the non-traditional means that would include a portfolio, teaching experience. We have the definition of it that is in our article as well. And then we have community experts, which I know there's been much discussion about. This is legislation that was enacted in 1985. And when I sat on the Board of Teaching, we spent considerable time reviewing these applications. It consumed way too much of our time, I thought. And so it's innovative to say to school personnel committees, which would include school board members, teachers, perhaps parents, administrators, to, after they've looked hard and long for a qualified licensed candidate, to open the door to a community expert and then to sit, I think, just as formally as we did on the Board of Teaching, to determine is this the best candidate for this need that we have, this need that's probably for just a couple of courses during the day, and look forward to that innovation in the classroom. We've also provided an exemption for technical education instructors. So with the approval of the school board, it would exempt a part-time vocational or career or technical education program teacher from being licensed. And then, members, we move into the change in unrequested leave for our teachers, moving away from a quality blind layoff. And this is a very exciting part of our bill, because we are holding up in, I think, the highest regard teacher performance, how important it is to have the best teachers teaching our students, and to allow school boards and bargaining units to sit down at the table and determine a plan whereby they will no longer use seniority only as a way to lay off teachers. And as we read story after story about possible layoffs in school districts, I would think this would be so encouraging for especially our newer teachers to know that perhaps they could be included in the mix of getting to continue in that assignment for which they have been teaching for the last year or years. So I think as we think about the future and changing, streamlining, and innovating, that we should look forward to this as a forward way of thinking about unrequested leave. Then we have a provision by Representative Mariani about allowing alternative teacher professional pay systems to include a hiring bonus or other compensation for effective teachers to work in hard-to-fill positions or hard-to-staff school settings. And this is innovative, and this is exciting as well, that we could perhaps move forward in this way as we look at the needs of our school districts. Representative Erdahl has included mentoring as a list for staff development activities. It is permissive, so it is not a mandate. Representative Nils Pearson included a requirement that student teachers be placed with a cooperating licensed teacher who's had at least 3 years of teaching experience and is not in an improvement plan. That, too, I think, will raise the standard in our schools when we have our teacher candidates working under our mentorship. Finally, in Article 1, Section 30, a bill brought forward by, I believe it's Representative Bly, that would encourage the Board of Teaching to collaborate with Mankato, MSU Mankato, or other faculty at other institutions of higher education to help teachers understand how they can become project-based learning providers. So that would be a proposal that I think would be considered innovative and certainly forward-thinking when we think of all the different strategies that our children could address in the classroom. So, Madam Chair, with that, that's Article 1, and I don't think the department has any additions to that. So if there are questions, or if you want me to just walk through the entire bill.
Well, are there any questions on Article 1 at this point? All right. I think go ahead and proceed to Article 2, Representative Erickson.
Statewide standards and student assessments. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. We've had some good discussions, members of the Finance Committee, in policy about testing. And I know the governor's proposal is a little different from ours, but we respected what the governor's testing reduction task force discussed. We don't follow them exactly, but we do align with them. We think it's really important that our students be tested 3 through 8, and we're hearing from parents across the state and actually across the nation that it's really important that every year every child have that capability to know where he or she has arrived in their learning, and that parents know and that teachers know as well. So we have grades 3 through 8 taking a test, the MCAs, that's aligned with our standards. And we think that testing every year is really important to the success of our students. We also have a provision by Representative Whalen that we not revise the math standards until 2021. The math standards were due for revision, and we know that teachers and students and parents are just getting used to our robust math standards. Then we have a provision, rather extensive, brought forth by Representative Norton in response to her bill from last year dealing with foreign language or foreign speaking students, actually, and those here who are learning to speak languages to earn seals and credentials. So that's included in Article 2. We also have some credit equivalencies in the areas of science, allowing agricultural science or career and technical, for example, to fulfill a credit in physics or chemistry. Then we have continuing our statewide testing. Again, for the most part, we align with the recommendations of the governor's testing task force. And we do strike language from the bill enacted or the language enacted in a previous legislative session that did provide for some other testing to be adopted and implemented. And since the task force recommended that we forego that, that is being stricken from our bill. The reference to guidelines in Section J of Article 2 is our statement about the fact that we'd like guidelines, not cut scores, but guidelines when it comes to the hope that MNSCU and K-12, the commissioner, that is, will be able to have a seamless relationship between our students in K-12 or E-12 and higher ed, and that students and parents would have an idea. They'd have a score guiding them in relation to what their child might want to pursue in the future, whether it's a two-year college, four-year college, or the like. And department, you have, I think, the repeal of the EPAS. Is that correct? And so maybe Mr. Huesner would like to address that.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd please just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Huesner. I'm the Deputy Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. Representative Erickson's correct. We do have a repeal of the EPAS program from ACT in was in the original policy proposal. And I do want to point out that the credit equivalencies in Section 4 for ag science, that was also a provision from our original bill.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I wanted to add something in regard to the proposal from the governor on testing and picking and choosing, as I would describe it. I read over the weekend, reread the language arts standards, and want to point out to members that in grade 6 and in grade 7 and in grade 8, there are some very robust standards that continue the essential reading skills and knowledge that our students learn in the previous grades. So in light of the fact that I'm a former language arts teacher, English teacher, as I called myself, and rereading the standards, I think it behooves us to keep in mind that our children are always learning to read. In fact, we as adults are always learning to read. There is much to consider as our children advance in their type of reading as they move through middle school and into the high school. And with these kinds of standards in place, and you can check them on the web if you like, but they link really very closely to history, social studies, and technical subjects as they move in advanced grades in those standards. And so that takes particular types of reading skills, and teachers have to be very much in tune to their children or their students' vocabulary level, their context level, how they find evidence to support an argument they may be making. It might be in a research project. So there's much that happens in grades 6 and 7 in the area of reading, and so I think it would be remiss on our part to say that children should not take a reading test in grades 6 or 7, or for that part, no math test in grades 3 and 4, when that's really the movement from K and 1 and 2 to our children understanding math concepts. And you can reread those standards too at your leisure, but it was fun to reread what our children are learning in kindergarten and first grade to be ready. And I think testing in 3 and 4 is essential for them and their parents to know where they fall in the realm of proficiency and growth. Then that ends Article 2, Madam Chair.
All right, any questions on Article 2? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erickson, on the testing, I think I've just lost it here, where the students don't have to pay for the tests.
The ACT, yes.
ACT,
correct.
Yeah. Who does pay for that, Representative Erickson?
The state out of the the money appropriated to the department that'll be taken care of, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Yes,
thank
Representative
you.
Newton and Madam Chair. Yes,
Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I'm not on the policy committee, so I'm trying to kind of follow some of this testing. So, Chair Erickson, is there more testing or less testing or the same amount of testing as in current law with your bill?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Markworth, there's less testing in this provision than was in than is in current law. Yes.
And then, Madam Chair.
Representative Markworth.
And then on the graduation, right now it's the ACT, and then there'll be some MCA. So, with eighth graders starting this year, what tests will they need to pass, or how does that work for sure? I'm trying to read the summary, and it just is a little unclear. So is the ACT still going to be an option? Or okay.
Madam Chair and Representative Markworth, yes. Yes. So they could use the MCA or they could use the ACT. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, not a question, just an observation. And when we mark up the bill, you know, we'll bring in some amendments and we'll have a further a deeper discussion around a number of issues, including testing. While it is true that technically in this language there's less testing, the less testing that's being captured here was less testing that was going away anyway. And that had to do with the withdrawal of the suite of assessments of the ACT, because that instrument was changed by the vendor. You know, the department can explain more about the details of that, so I think it is accurate that in here there's less testing, but it's less testing that was going away anyway. And actually I have some pain around that. And you know, in the department language, and as I said, we'll be moving those in the near future, there is actual less testing relative to the MCAs that are in that framework. But my second comment really just has to do, and this is not directed at you, Chair Erickson, or anyone else, it's just an observation of what happened once the vendor pulled or changed the instrument and pulled the two instruments that we were using, and I'm blanking on their names right now. What we lose with that is a focus on what I call a student-centered approach to assessments relative to a student's interest, interest in career and post-secondary goals. There is an alternative way to keep some of that. The department did come up with that language. We tried moving that, and policy was not successful. I hope we'll have a good discussion here when we mark up this bill, but I just want members to know that the logic the last 2 years was not just simply to provide information to students about what a guideline or a cut score, or whatever it is, relative to an MCA assessment, but would be relevant to their career and post-secondary interests, but actually to provide detailed information for students so that at an early age they can make intelligent, guided discussions or decisions about their course taking through high school. We're going to lose the power of that anyway because of the loss, because of the decision of the vendor. But there is a better way to keep true to that, and unfortunately this language here does not do that. And I hope that when we move our amendments in the near future, we'll have a deeper discussion about how we can stay true to this legislature really looking to arm and equip students with the best possible tools available so that they can really customize their educational experience relative to their career and post-secondary goals. So, Madam Chair, I'll stop there and look forward to the debate in the coming weeks.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And we will certainly have more thorough discussions on this. And, you know, you're talking about the plan and the explore and tests and that. So, and I, you know, I welcome the conversation. So. Representative Erickson, if you have any comments as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani. I know we will have a robust discussion on this. One of the reasons for our aligning more closely with the governor's test reduction task force is that his plan is premised on a waiver, and I don't think it's fair to school districts, to teachers, to parents, and to our students not to know the direction that they should take when it comes to assessment. So there would be no, I think, indication of a waiver before June. Perhaps the department can tell us differently. But again, I think that the cry from parents, especially our parents whose children struggle in school, is that they want to know. They want to know where they are when it comes to growth and proficiency. So with that, Madam Chair, I can move on to Article 3, if you like.
All right. And
I think Mr. McHenry has something.
I was going
to
say, Mr. McHenry, did you have any comments on the waiver discussion we were just having?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, just following up just to Representative Erickson's comments. Right now, school districts are setting their testing calendar for next school year. So they need to start preparing now. Regardless if it's legislation change or if we do need a waiver, they're setting their calendars now. So this is something that we're looking at long-term and planning for schools. So whether it's the waiver or this piece of legislation passing or the governor's piece of legislation passing, it's going to take some time for that to actually become implemented.
Thank you. I'm sorry. And would you please just state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, I apologize. Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry.
And in regard to testing, members and Madam Chair, it's also important to remember that much of the testing that appears on our school calendars is self-imposed by districts, and that's their choice. It is their choice to use a growth test and frequently, as some of my school districts do, and to use other tests besides the teacher-generated tests. And I'm sure Representative Markwood could address that as a classroom teacher, that he did his share of testing, as I did my share, and all of us do, so that we always know what our children know and understand so we can address their needs or push them a little harder or do something that's going to motivate and help their learning. So Article 3 is educating.
Representative, I'm sorry, Erickson, we do have another question. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, actually, about the testing and whether it's creating less or mandating less testing. This component actually does mandate less testing. The ACT test for 11th or 12th grade is optional versus being required. And I think that's really important for a couple of reasons. One, those students who are going on to, say, the military or other options that they don't need to take the ACT, that it's just not wasteful testing. And also, I've talked to many, many special ed teachers and special ed directors, and just having that optional is a huge issue for those students that have the anxiety with the timed test and so on. So it does actually offer less testing for our schools.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Other questions? All right, I think we're ready now for Article 3. Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Article 3 is the heaviest section of our bill in regard to Representative Norton's foreign language and culture proficiency certificates and seals. And so we have made those changes. In Section 3, Representative Dabney has a provision here that would require a disaggregating of data by student group, school district, and post-secondary institution when it comes to much of our school choice, AP, IB, and PSEO. Representative Dabney also offered a provision whereby we'll learn more about our children who are homeless or highly mobile in our school districts to help improve student performance and help our schools deal with those issues. I neglected to mention Representative Seltzer in Section 7. Well, I didn't neglect, but I'm going to bring it up now, that world language would be available in grades 11 and 12 for seals and certificates. And also, I think the department might want to address several issues within this article, if Mr. Huser would like to do that.
Mr. Huser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, I believe our sections in this article begin on Section 10. One of the provisions here would provide a preference for the commissioner to add students whose parents are under 21 and pursuing some sort of higher ed. We did modify some of our original language to make sure that we're capturing all the different types of post-secondary options that a person could have. I believe that section also includes so students that are currently receiving Race to the Top scholarships, when that money ceases, they would be eligible for a state scholarship as well. Section 11 would allow a prioritization for homeless youth or for foster students or foster care children as a priority for a scholarship. And that's Section 11. Section 12 would outline the disqualifying factors for a program providing services for students receiving scholarships. Section 13 it's clarifying the records that must be kept by a program offering scholarship services. Section 14. Sorry, Madam Chair, I lost my train of thought. Oh, it clarifies that the scholarships must be used for a program that a child attends on a consistent basis. And I believe that that's the rest of our sections in that article. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, perhaps the department could talk about the section on American Indian education and our efforts to improve educational opportunities for them.
Mr. Huser.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I did not mean to forget this part. Sections 15 through, I believe, 27. I'll speak about them broadly, and if we do have questions, I'll do my best to answer any detailed questions we have. However, these do make some technical changes, some preference language that the department has regarding the Indian Education Act, different changes to statute, adding Tribal Nations Education Committee in some places, making sure that American Indian students are receiving all of the aid that they actually qualify for, and make some affirmative efforts in hiring. And like I said, if there are any more detailed questions, I'll do my best, or we can make sure to get back to the committee.
All right, thank you. And we do have our nonpartisan research staff with us, Ms. Larson. If there's anything you wish to add, feel free to give us a signal here, or if question, if members have more detailed questions about the bill. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a small question, and I didn't catch this when we were in the policy committee. So on line 5725, that's the section 6, there's a change in terms of eligibility for federal grants, and the change goes from Title IV to Title VII. Was that just merely in alignment with what the feds had done, or is that an actual change in one program to another program that the federal government funds?
I'm sorry, is that article, Madam Chair?
Section 16.
And Madam Chair, I'm just trying to determine whether that's a substantive thing or it's just a conforming change.
Mr. Huesner.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I believe that is a conforming change. I don't believe it's a substantive change.
Any other questions on that particular section? All right. Let's see. Representative Erickson, do you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 4, Education Programs. Section 1 is the four-day week school calendar that would be under the authority of our school boards. Section 2 is adding to our local literacy plan the importance of dyslexia, and that we want teachers to be able to understand how to teach our children who may have been diagnosed with dyslexia. In Section 3, we allow a student in grade 10 who did not take the MCA reading test. Well, I think this is actually a department, but that's okay. In grade 8, to substitute another reading assessment accepted by the Minsky Institution, enrolling in career and technical. Then we move on to the flexible learning year calendar, whereby we change the authority to the school district from the commissioner. Section 11 is Representative Mullery's home visiting program, and the fact that we think it's very important that brain development be included in the information that is taught to our parents about their infant and their child as he or she grows. Section 13 requires all Minsky institutions to give full credit to a PSEO student who completes for post-secondary credit a post-secondary course or program that is part of or all of a goal or transfer curriculum at Minsky. Section 14 is service learning, and this is a directive to the commissioner to make a recommendation to us in a year or so on teacher preparation and licensure requirements for service learning. This, in addition to project-based learning, would be two innovation pieces that we think are important for our teachers. And, Madam Chair, for the most part, that encapsulates Article 4.
We do have a couple of questions. Representative Marianne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question so much as a quick observation. And we spoke about this a little bit in policy committee on the flexible school year provision, which I actually mostly favor. However, I do think that there's something missing here, and that has to do with, I mean, this is still an exception. Currently, these exist under an exception that the commissioner grants, and there's a reason for that. And so the observation here really has to do with, I believe this language is silent, whether or not a school district in this that would fall under this category, whether or not whether we should expect that school district to continue to follow this exception in the event that the school district is not achieving student outcome goals relative to either our rules-based workforce accountability system and or the ESEA NCLB one. And so I just want to put it out there that I think we should think carefully about this and probably have a little bit further conversation about putting perhaps, you know, some kind of, you know, stronger accountability for those school districts. It would seem to me pretty, at the very least, that it wouldn't look good if in our state we have a few districts that exercise this option and yet are not making progress or adequate or proper progress with student outcomes. I think that would send the wrong kind of message out to the public and to other school districts as well. But generally, I think it's a good creative idea, and I, you know, with that exception, I would think it'd be something that we should pursue.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Any other questions or comments? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that service learning, is that service learning for the teachers or service learning for the students? Or is it both?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, to a certain extent, it's both. But the directive in Section 14 is for the commissioner to make recommendations to us on the teacher preparation and licensure requirements for service learning. So that will be a directive for her to work with stakeholders. So we'll approach it from the teacher's side before they deliver to the students. And service learning is being used to a certain extent, but not to the extent that we have members interested. So it is certainly worth looking at as we include more career and technical education, I think, in our school districts.
Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Please proceed, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 5, Special Education. I know that this is a blend of language that was arrived at between the department and the deaf and hard of hearing communities. So I think perhaps I'll turn to the department or to someone who might be an expert in that area to explain the changes that were made here under special education and the community of deaf and hard of hearing.
Welcome. If you please just state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, Darren Cordy. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. Yes, we had some language that was introduced in the governor's and agency policy bill that raised some concerns with the Commission of Deaf and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. They had suggested this language here, which ended up in the bill, and I think that we're still kind of trying to work on some fine-tuning of this language as well to reflect the actual position title of the person that we have at the department who works with deaf and hard of hearing students, but pretty confident we'll be able to get that ironed out. In fact, I think we have some language when the bill does come to markup.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. Any questions on that?
Right. Madam Chair and committee, I think the department also should explain the changes they're making in the state interagency area where they're involving school boards and county boards in payment of interagency services.
I'll defer to Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Okay. Welcome back, Mr. Cordy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Darren Cordy from the Department of Education. The purpose of this language is mainly technical. You can, it kind of looks like a lot of language, but it's really just aligning these current coordination team responsibilities with existing practice. There were some changes made a number of years ago, or a few years ago, to change these from more school district-based committees to regional committees, which brought in kind of more of a county presence. We actually, after this meeting, I have a meeting with the county social services folks to discuss this language, is to ensure, double check with them, make sure that there's not anything in here that's providing additional responsibilities or making additional changes other than just ones of a technical nature.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, there are also a number of provisions that individual legislators on the Education Committee provided in the bill, too. Two of them are from Representative Christensen, one having to do with preparing paraprofessionals who work with children with disabilities. Another had to do with Representative Christensen's student online information system, requiring a universal filing system that is compatible both with the online filing system that the department is working on, as well as individual district filing systems. And then Representative Dabney also proposed a bill on physical holding and seclusion, and that language is included in the article on special education as well.
Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and committee, I think that finalizes Article 5.
Oh, and we have one more comment.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Larson.
My apologies. One more, actually two more. Representative Wills introduced a bill proposing to effect a number of the legislative auditors proposals on special education, and two of the five proposals are there. And in addition, Representative Urusso is directing the department to look at reading complexity related to special education forms, and that is included in Article 5, too.
Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 6 is charter schools, and we have someone from the department to talk about the language they inserted, and then I'll refer to a couple of provisions that we added in policy.
Mr. McHenry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Through this bill, I'm going to start on Section 2. There was an incident recently where we had an authorizer had withdrawn but did not announce their intent to withdraw before the end of their five-year term. So in this paragraph on page 96, it's clarifying that they can that the authorizer would notify the commissioner of their intent to withdraw regardless of the end of their five-year contract with the department. Moving on to Section 3, there was an incident that the policy committee worked on last year in both bodies to clarify the affidavit process for authorizers to make sure that we had a clear process for authorizers, what was intended from authorizers and from the department to make sure the process was clean as possible. The stricken language on 98.1 and 0.11 was just clarified a little bit further because there was some information regarding the specific July 1st or the May 1st date of what year that would provide or what year that applied to. So we wanted to make sure moving forward that we were clarifying the time frame for when they would actually submit an affidavit for when a new charter school would begin. Moving on to Section 4. Section 4 was brought forth by I believe this was by Friends of Education, and I'm more than happy to walk through this unless Representative Erickson wanted to. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped that section. Back in Section 4, other clarifying language we worked on last session was to ensure that when charter schools have a pre-K program, that it is free, and making sure that when a student enrolls in a free program, that student would have preference into the charter school's kindergarten program. The issue that this is trying to continue to clarify is that if you have some spaces that are paid for and some spaces that are not, there could be incidents where parents or individuals may be able to buy their way into preference, and we're trying to ensure that preference is based on free education for all.
And then, Madam Chair and committee members, in Section 5, an innovation, this is brought by Friends of Charter School Education, that would give preference to enrolling children who are on free or reduced price lunch, so that they would have the opportunity to enroll in a charter school. That language committee would begin on 104.20.
Madam Chair, members, again, Section 6 is just clarifying the transportation for charter schools enrolling pupils with a disability, and this is just conforming to the same provisions in standard district setting as well. If you're moving on to Section 7, it's updating to allow the charter school to update all of their reporting or their annual reports to be part of their World's Best Workforce plan to help simplify. Moving on to Section 8. Section 8 was brought forth by Charter School Partners.
That's correct. And this, Madam Chair and members, would be the opportunity to close. The authorizer of a charter school could terminate an existing contract between the authorizer and the charter school if in each of the previous three consecutive school years the performance of the charter school based on federal school accountability measures and on state measures would be below in the bottom 10% of all public schools as determined by the commissioner. So it's a great innovative piece on accountability.
And Madam,
nine.
Madam Chair, members, Section 9, this is related to when two charter schools merge. Right now in statute we do have language that clarifies what happens when a charter school closes, but we don't have anything specific as to what happens through a merger. This past interim we did have to work on an instance where two schools merged, and we wanted to make sure that we had a process that did not penalize any of the students. So for example, when a certain school closes, the funds actually go back to the state. And what we wanted to do is make sure that if there's funds that were generated by a specific pupil and they merged, that charter school wasn't penalized and lost those specific revenue streams. So what we're doing here in this merger language is trying to clarify a process that we had to go through and make sure that this is something that's beneficial and a clear process for mergers in the future.
And then, Madam Chair and members, Section 11 is the revisor's instruction to renumber the provisions of our charter school language to make it its own section of law.
Right. Representative Slocum had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 5, the allowing charter school to give enrollment preference to children eligible to receive free or reduced lunch price. That troubled me when we heard that bill, and about the legality. How does that work? How can you ask parents who are coming in to register their children to then, how do you determine before they're enrolled to give preference to a family that is filling out a form for free and reduced lunch? I'm concerned here. My question is this legal? And how so?
Madam Chair and members, I believe that both organizations, both charter school organizations, worked out this language before we actually adopted it. But I can't phone a friend because I don't see a friend in the audience who brought forth this provision. It was former Representative Karen Klinzing and her organization of charter schools. So I can't address it, but I think it'll be a good topic for discussion when we mark up the bill, if this is included.
Madam Chair, I worry about the legality because you're asking people for income information prior to enrolling, is what it appears to me, and troubles me greatly. Madam Chair, if you'll indulge me, I have a second question.
Sure.
With Section 8, where like three consecutive years, the performance of the charter school based on federal school accountability measures and state measures allows for the termination of the charter school. Can you describe for me a parallel equivalent treatment for a traditional district?
Madam Chair and committee members, we do not have one after No Child Left Behind was amended, because when No Child Left Behind was first enacted, I believe that there were options for improvement if the school did not meet certain requirements, but that no longer exists, so this would be entirely innovative.
Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, my question then is, how is that fair? How does that make the playing field even if a traditional district can, and school districts have different, you get what you get in a public school. Whatever shows up at the door, you educate the best you can. And if a charter school has a high poverty population, their scores are likely to be lower, not in every case, but likely to be. And I think that the penalties for a charter seem to be much harsher than for a traditional district, and that troubles me. I like an even playing field.
Thank you, Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Slocum. I hear what you're saying. I think that this has been a provision that the organization Friends of Charter Schools has been a proponent of for some time, and I carried this legislation. I think their goal and my goal is to ensure that charter schools are held to a very high standard, as I hope we hold all of our schools. So I think this will be a good discussion, too, as we move forward, and perhaps we'll have in the audience those who can address it more specifically.
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, just to provide a little bit more on the in the language for Representative Erickson, I think there is a clause in there that does allow for that charter school that is identified,
absolutely,
that they could submit some they could submit an information as to what they're doing and why they should continue to operate, that could be reviewed by the commissioner. So there is that permission that's allowed in this legislation that was brought forward.
Yeah, there is a default, Representative Sullivan. I think, Madam Chair, that ends Section 7, because unless the department wants to comment on a couple of technical changes, but I think they're understandable. Madam Chair, should I continue with Article 8?
Yes, I don't see any other questions. Go ahead.
Article 8, Madam Chair and members, libraries, other facilities, and technology. These are basically department changes, although we did amend, or I think actually the department brought forth this change in paragraph B, but it's the E-rates technical change and adding a what's called a chief administrative officer for our regional library system, and noting that that officer can be compensated by no more than one of our regional library systems. Section 3, members and Madam Chair, is from Representative Clark and her concern, and she brought up parent and children to the hearing as well, her concern about the disproportionate impact of swimming resources. And so this is a directive to the commissioner to establish a work group that would learn about the availability of swimming instruction and activities across our state. And I know Representative Clark is very concerned about our children learning to swim at a young age, and she had testifiers to that extent. Article 9, Madam Chair and members. And I will turn to the department to explain the technical changes.
Mr. Huesner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 1 makes a change related to some dates with the November forecast. We do have some experts in the audience if we do have some technical questions with some of those changes. Section 2, this relates to the dissolution of a cooperative. What this would allow is for those parties that are involved, the cost of that process would be on them. Current law is that those costs would be borne by MDE. Section 3.
Just a date change.
Is a date change. Thank you.
Section 4, Madam Chair and members, Representative Murphy, this is where this the service learning specialist would really be much closer to the classroom, because this is asking the commissioner to create a specialist position and then to work with our school districts to provide assistance in developing community-based partners or participants such as nonprofits, units of government, higher ed, etc., to work on service learning. And the commissioner then may provide or may contract for specialized expertise in this area. And then Section 5, I believe the department, those are technical changes.
Yes, Madam Chair. This changes the date for the litigation cost report from the January 15th to February 1st.
And I believe Section 6. Section 8. Oh, I'm sorry.
Am I in the right?
Yeah, they're both date changes.
Yeah.
And so Section 8 is also from the department, but I can just note for you in paragraph D, the P20 partnership, education partnership that we have, that the commissioner now will be the designee of the Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children, which we enacted in the last session. And Section 9 would be a technical change from the department. And Madam Chair, with that, that's 1591.
Right. Any other questions from committee members? Any other comments you want to share with us on the bill, Representative Erickson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I hope as we go forward, we will think first of all about our students, our children, and what is provided for them that will lead to a way to meet their needs in a variety of ways, but most of all in the classroom, and then of our teachers who deliver that knowledge and teach those skills. And I'm so hopeful that we can consider a change from our quality blind layoffs, and that we also will streamline the licensure system so that those candidates trained in other states, those candidates or teachers licensed in other states will find a no barrier way to enter our teaching profession. And I hope that brings with it a diverse group of teacher candidates so that we can also meet the needs of our ever-increasing diverse population of students. And then, of course, to take a look at our test reduction and to keep in mind that we want to know how all of our students are doing in grades 3 through 8, and our parents do as well. And I hope we will honor, for the most part, the recommendations made by the governor's test reduction task force. And I think with that, there are other innovations in this bill that I look forward to discussing and further discussing with Senator Wieger as he's moved forward with his bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And if the department representative and if others need to come down, I just had a few questions, and I probably will I'll be asking for a fiscal note on the bill just because there may be some fiscal implications to some of these, and some that I was just wondering if the department wanted to comment on, or just if you want to give any direction or thoughts on for the committee at this point. But you know, in Article 1, Section 2, the Board of Teaching, I'm just wondering if any costs associated with some of the reporting requirements in there for the Board of Teaching that we should be aware of or just be mindful of that may come forward in a fiscal note. And I don't know if you want to take that, Mr. Huesner or Mr. McHenry.
Well, Madam Chair, I wouldn't want to speak for the Board of Teaching. I think that they be best to speak for themselves. I think I don't know if they happen to be here today, but nope. I think in Section 2, anything that does come up with the division of licensing, I think would come out in a fiscal note.
Okay. Yes, no, unfortunately, I don't see anyone here with the Board of Teaching and that, so we, you know, as we have further discussions on it, but that is something that we're going to want to be mindful of. So then I'll just move into Article 3, Section 3. And I'm just wondering if there would be any costs to the department or any additional staff that may be needed. Oh, I'm sorry. Sections 3 through 6.
Madam Chair, I think with Section 3, the disaggregation of data, there may be, we may have to look and see if this is data that we currently collect in that form. So we may need to take a look and see what that would take.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Huesner. Mr. McHenry?
No, Madam Chair, I think... Representative, Mr. Huesner did cover that. I think what we're trying to find is how we can actually get some of the data when we're talking about homeless students and their transitional students, and sometimes it's not just an easy resource where we already have the data already coming through. So that's something that we'd have to look into.
Very, very well. And I know I'll ask you just, Representative Dabney. I know generally there's a definition of homeless, and I'm just wondering, because I think I'm a co-author on your bill, in fact, but I'm just wondering if the definition was changed at all from what I think is kind of commonly accepted or anything that furthers defines it for this reporting.
Madam Chair, I think the intent, and I'd have to go to the bill to double-check, the bill as introduced used the phrase homeless and highly mobile. There is a federal definition of homeless, which is understood. Schools already report that. The department has that information. It's certainly agreeable, if it hasn't been done already, to drop the reference to highly mobile. That's a bit of a term of art and maybe unduly vague, but I also assume that most of the students who might qualify as highly mobile probably qualify as homeless, and that we're capturing what we need under the federal definition.
Thank you, Representative Devaney.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think that's helpful, because I'm just, you know, I think it's very valuable information to capture. I'm just wondering if there would be any difficulty that would arise from trying to define, again, the universe of students we're trying to count and be aware of.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may.
Representative Devaney.
We've got the department already has the information. Districts count it, they report it. And the department holds on to it. I think the real question raised by the language is, how do we report it? And I think if we make it in line with current law, which says, paraphrasing, the commissioner should report out data on demographics which seem to be highly correlated to achievement, what experience and research shows is that having experienced homelessness is actually more highly correlated to achievement than any of the demographics we currently report on. And so we're kind of missing a piece that's sitting there in our blind spot, and this is an attempt to elevate that using data the department already has.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Krisha? Either of you have any other comments on that?
Madam Chair, again, if you're raising fiscal comments in the bill, one thing I do want to raise is the something that we're trying to work through to get a better understanding of the testing language. By providing an option of the ACT, it might be helpful to understand if that's clarified as a graduation requirement, if that is in place of the MCAs or in addition to the MCAs. By allowing to have that in multiple grades, which was a recommendation of a task force and initially was in the governor's bill, is something that we do want to be able to provide more flexibility to students. But unfortunately, there is a cost to the state and to the department when we offer multiple dates. Right now in our contract with ACT, we do have a specific statewide date for ACT in 11th grade and one makeup date. Anything that we do in addition to that has a potential for cost. That's something that we are working at with ACT. And we'll continue to do so and work with you and the author of the bill to clarify any potential fiscal impacts with respect to testing.
Thank you. And I almost called you representative as well.
You're the second
Mr. Huesner, I guess we want you in the body. Yes.
Madam Chair, I believe Dr. Melcher wanted to clarify something in Article 9, Section 9.
Well. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I just wanted to clarify that the language in Article 9, Section 9 did have a fiscal note on the Senate companion bill, and it did come in with a $22,000 cost.
Would you say $22,000?
$22,000 cost.
Thank you. And could you tell us why, what that is from?
Madam Chair and members, the language included there that adds cooperative units to the authorization puts the cost over the $10 million that was appropriated last year. So the total cost would be $10,022,000 if you include that, adding the education districts and cooperatives to the eligibility for that revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Melcher. You. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, is to the department, is there no cost to Article 9, Section 4?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, Representative Mariani.
I'm sorry, Article 9, Section 4. Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a cost related to that.
Yes, I don't know if who wants to take that from the department. That is the cost, maybe salary and benefits for the service learning specialist position. Mr. Cordy?
Madam Chair, Darren Cordy from the Department of Education. Representative Mariani, yes, that would carry a cost. We used to have a service learning specialist that was funded through a federal grant, which was discontinued, and so we don't currently have a service learning specialist. We would need to hire one. And one other piece I would note, if we're talking about items that may have fiscal impact, and I apologize, I don't have the number on here, but in the swimming inventory and report, we were asked to do a couple of inventories last year, one on physical education and one on career and technical education. Not sure, you know, kind of in the grand scheme of things, how this one would compare to those, but those actually do become pretty labor-intensive. And there were appropriations for those two inventories last year, so I would anticipate a fiscal cost for that as well.
Thank you. Let's see. Representative Mariani, you had the floor, so go ahead if you have another question.
Sure. And then also on Article 2, Section 8, and we talked a little bit about this in policy committee. It wasn't clear to me what was happening there. And I was a little worried that what was happening there was a brand new test. So I'm wondering if the department has an opinion on what that language means to them at this point, and whether they have any concerns relative to cost.
Mr. McHenry?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I believe you're referring to, and I apologize, just getting to the right page here, referring to the addition of the writing test. Right now, the state does not have a specifically built test for writing, so this would be a new test we would have to work with our vendor to construct. There could potentially be a cost with this. I think one of the things that's happening in this bill and also is happening in the governor's bill is just the balance of the tests that are being reduced and the tests such as this one that could be added. You're getting rid, in this bill, of the Explore the Plan, which contain the career interest surveys. You're also getting rid of the Compass, so you do get some savings in that bill, but here you are adding a writing component, mm-hmm. and you are adding the option of having the ACT in 11th and 12th grade, which that's something that we would need to figure out the specific cost of where that might be, and would have to work with the vendors to make certain what that cost would be, if it cancels each other out, if it saves money, or if there's an increase in money as well.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McHenry, on page 40, Article 2, Section 7, in paragraph 2, and I read, achievement and career college readiness in mathematics, reading, and writing, we already have it in law. So what is the issue?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, what you're delineating in this bill is a specific writing test. in addition to math and reading, and under English language arts, some of the writing is already embedded in the tests that are already made. If you're specifying a specific writing test, that would be an additional test to build on top of that test for English language arts.
So, Madam Chair, and Mr. McHenry, where is writing placed presently?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, I'm going to bring up our Director of Assessment, Jennifer Dugan, to get into the specifics of how each of our tests are built.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan. Would you please just introduce yourself fully for the record?
Thank you. Jennifer Dugan, Director for Statewide Testing at the Minnesota Department of Education. And so I believe Representative Erickson, you were talking about paragraph C on page 40. So this entire section is really talking about what was enacted in 2013. It is talking about that suite of assessment that was enacted for career and college readiness. And so right now, the way that this is being assessed is under the grade 8 Explorer and grade 10 plan assessments under their English language arts umbrella in grade 8 and 10, and then also on the college entrance exam, using the college entrance exam plus writing. And so that's these assessments under paragraph C are not required to be aligned to Minnesota academic standards. So
Madam Chair
Erickson.
And Ms. Dugan, since there is the writing component in ACT, that could be considered the writing component, though. Is that not correct?
Ms. Dugan.
If we were to consider it for a high school requirement, or not necessarily requirement, but standard.
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I believe we could have a conversation about how to implement this, how to best implement this and best implement the intent and address all of the concerns.
Madam Chair, I am concerned about writing. I know that when I was teaching and we were using the writing test, we were using it at the eighth grade level. Then I believe it moved to the ninth grade level while I was still teaching, and it is important that we have some kind of assessment in writing, but it perhaps could be covered in the ACT plus writing, depending on whether or not all students take it, of course. But, Madam Chair, I also have a question of Mr. McHenry in regard to the service learning specialist.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. McHenry, it seems to me that you've added a lot of staff at MDE in the last year. Is there not a person on staff now who could become that service learning specialist without having to hire another person?
Mr. Cordy.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, it's certainly something we could take a look at, but currently we don't have staff who would be able to fill this role. I mean, the staff that we do have all have jobs that are that they're responsible for in order to ensure that we're meeting our requirements under state and federal law, and this would be a new requirement. And I think, a fiscal note would probably bear out whether or not we would be able to absorb that. But just upon, reading of the text and the fact that we don't have a service learning specialist, I would anticipate there'd be a fiscal cost for that.
And Mr. McHenry?
And Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to be fair to the to the group and provide a little bit more information as to the point of MDE hiring significant amounts of new staff. Fiscal year 10, our general fund FTEs have actually decreased by six, and our federal fund FTEs have increased by 13. So they tend to balance out in that sense. We are funded significantly. Almost half of our staff are federally funded. So as we're balancing some of the work that needs to be done, there are requirements from our federal staff that they're accountable for the funds that are coming from the federal government. So we report that they're actually doing the work required by the federal government.
Representative Erickson, additional?
No, we're just going to consider this as we move forward. I think we can have some discussions about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this interchange brought up a query in that we see fiscal notes and that, and generally we're seeing increases as new programs are added, but frequently bills have repealers or a program sunsets and ends. And I don't remember seeing or hearing in committee how many FTEs were decreased because activities no longer were going ongoing. You know, maybe it's because they've been shifted to something new. It'd be nice to understand it as things evolve that you've had five FTEs that were doing something that sunsetted, and now those five are doing something else. That way, financially, we can understand what's happening. Because what I appear to hear is, oh, we need to add people to do this, this, and this. But I never hear the opposite, even though it was, in the comment of where it our general fund decreased and the federal increase. So there's some shifting going around. It just might be nice to have some visibility or transparency on that.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, Representative Quam, we're happy to provide any information requested. That's exactly what the fiscal note process is for. If you're reducing a program or if you are increasing a program, in that fiscal note, it details the amount of employees that would be required to actually perform the program or potentially be decreased in that program. So I think that's where we'd be able to find if there's any specific reductions, where we would find that. Also, just to be clear, there are times when initiatives come up and they aren't funded for the department. In the past, one of the examples is QComp. QComp was passed, and we didn't have administrative funds to actually oversee that program. So we've used federal staff to actually comply with state law. So there are instances where we're trying to cover both angles, and that's something that we look forward to continue working with you as a committee and with you, Madam Chair, as we move forward.
Thank you. And Representative Erickson, was it to this point?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And to this point of staffing, could you provide us with a flow chart of how your staff is configured at the department so that we could better understand how that is, how you're organized? And I don't want names, of course, but the position or the area. You've just mentioned that the federal now is covering QComp. We should know those things. We need some transparency. So if you could provide us with a chart or a schematic of the flow of from the commissioner and throughout the department. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, we're more than happy to provide an organization chart.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I think it's a great suggestion. I suspect it'll be a three-dimensional flowchart, though. We might need holograms to be able to see that. You know, and Madam Chair, I'll add my name to the guilty, quote-unquote. When we did the LEAPS Act, I think we created some brand-new, strong expectations on the part of the MDE, which are good expectations, but I do worry that we may have not provided the resources needed for the department to really carry those expectations out in full fidelity. I just want to make a very quick comment, and I'd be glad to work with you on this, Representative Erickson. I do share your concern about the writing, assessments and components. However, if we're going to depend on the ACT to do that, Representative Bennett shared that, you know, that's going to be optional. And so, you know, there's an inconsistency here, I think, that we're going to need to address if we're going to do full fidelity to your desire to our desire to push forward something around writing here. And I think when Ms. Dugan came up, I think her observation is that this is probably more complex than we think it is, because now we're talking about aligning it, you know, to our entire MCA structure. And so it seems to me that even if the ACT were not optional, we probably are talking about a brand new test here. And that may well be the case, but we should be clear about that, and we should properly resource that if that's the intent. But be glad to work with you and others on this as we go forward.
Thank you. Any comments or suggestions from other committee members? All right. Other questions? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. McHenry, Representative Erickson, I really am glad that you put emphasis. I'm so glad that you put emphasis on the licensure by portfolio.
And I've been asking questions about that since I found out about it. And I'm confused because I understand that the Board of Teaching is at the board, at the State Department of Education, and that one of the reasons that someone told me that one of the reasons that licensure by portfolio was never enacted or used a lot or urged was because the department didn't like it. And so if the department didn't like it, I don't know how come the Board of Teaching couldn't use that anyway. Can you clear that up a little bit for me?
Mr. McHenry.
A little history, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, appreciate the question. Just to clarify from the beginning is the Board of Teaching as well as the Board of School Administrators are their own autonomous boards. They are housed at the Department of Education, but they are not part of the Department of Education, and the Commissioner does not have oversight of either of the boards. I think the history behind the licensure via portfolio is there's language passed, but the actual fees collected to pay for the review via portfolio, it's a more time-intensive process. It's not necessarily it's reviewing an individual's breadth of work rather than just a specific form. So it is specific. It is really time-intensive, and when you're dealing with staffing levels and maybe not having the appropriate funds to bring in the independent oversight that are doing the review of these portfolios, it has been difficult to meet that standard. That being said, I don't think there's anybody, and I would apologize if you've heard from anybody saying that the Department of Education does not like licensure via portfolio. That's not something that has come from this administration, from my commissioner, or anybody. We want to make sure that we are implementing to the best of our ability. We want to make sure we have the right resources to implement what the legislature passes, and we'll continue to work with you moving forward.
Madam Chair, Mr. McHenry, so from what I heard you say, and I believe you, then the fiscal note on licensure by portfolio would be made out by the Board of Teaching.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm going to apologize. I wasn't involved specifically in the fiscal note. For areas that are directed to the Board of Teaching that have a cost, the Board of Teaching would do the fiscal note. If it's something that requires work out of, let's say, our Department of Licensure, they work closely with the Board of Teaching, and they would provide comments on specific areas that that apply to the Division of Licensing within the Department of Education.
Oh, Madam Chair, now I'm our Department of Licensure. So the Department of Education licenses.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the Department of Education has a Division of Licensing which oversees the mechanics of actually licensing teachers. The Board of Teaching oversees our teacher prep programs, and they also oversee some of the alternative routes through licensure, such as alternative licensure. You've heard about the Teach for America program. Areas such as that will go through the Board of Teaching. So there is some work that does happen together, but there are some distinct roles that each agency or the agency and the Board of Teaching play.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, and then the licensure by portfolio, the Board of Teaching would have to go through the portfolios.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the way that I've seen the bill, that it does direct the Board of Teaching, to actually administer the licensure via portfolio, yes.
Mr. McHenry and Representative Murphy, actually, way the legislation is written currently, and that it is not quite accurate. The Board of Teaching is this current practice. There's a fee associated with it, and that fee goes to the Board of Teaching, but it is the licensure department that actually does the review of the portfolios. And House File 2, which we debated and voted on the House floor, would direct the Board of Teaching to inform a portfolio candidate if their portfolio had been rejected, why it had been rejected. So they got a letter back from the board telling them, here's why your portfolio was not accepted or you were not recommended for licensure based upon your portfolio. But I believe it is always been, to my understanding, and would be still, the Department of Licensure that would review the portfolios. Mr. McHenry, do you have a disagreement with that?
Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to clarify that offline. We can move forward. We can move forward if you'd like. I think it might be helpful to have the Board of Teaching actually here. We could actually discuss the issue and get all the specifics that Representative Murphy is asking for.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, that was the House File 2 is the impetus that got me thinking about these and inquiring about these with mostly my team. And I wasn't, it's never been clear, and it still isn't clear, and so we've got to do that. Madam Chair, I think we have to do that to straighten out this recommendation in the Representative Erickson's bill that's coming before us and that we're going to be marking up. And so we have to have an answer before we do that. Plus, I want to know whoever does it, I would like to know what the cost is of individual going through individual portfolios and that kind of thing, because there was no, as I understand it, there was no particular request to change the amount of money that was in the Board of Teaching along the way, not in House File 2 and not in the Board of Teaching before this committee and not in the governor's recommendations. Or I don't think anything was submitted to the governor for that, and it seems to me that they're going to be good and be able to do things. We've got to have the right amount of money earmarked for the particular tasks that we're asking for. And this, I think, licensure by portfolio is a wonderful alternative.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. McHenry, anything?
Nothing to add. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Other questions from committee members? All right, we've got just a few minutes, so I'm going to just open the testifier table if there's anyone here that wishes to testify. Obviously, the bill is going to come back to us when we mark it up, but if you wanted to just anyone offer comments on House File 1591, please feel free to come down and offer your testimony at this time. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ann Hobby, and I'm with Parents United for Public Schools, but I'm stepping out of that role to be a parent and just say that the small component of this that would have a choice at the 11th or 12th grade level to do the ACT or the MCA, we currently, as a parent, I opted my son out of the MCA because he was taking the ACT, and I just want to clarify that would remain a choice. Is that the idea with that provision? Or would all students take the MCA, and if they wish to, they could additionally take the ACT?
And Ms. Hobby, I'm going to allow Ms. Larson to give a response to that based upon the language of the bill.
Madam Chair, members, my understanding of how this is structured, on page 40, paragraph C, you have the state graduation requirements. And in clause 1, there is a cross-reference to the high school assessments required under subdivision 1A, which is the subsequent subdivision in this article. However, the provision having to do with the ACTs appears in paragraph E. So it would suggest that this nationally recognized assessment that is a college entrance exam must be offered to students at no cost in grade 11 or 12, but is not part of the required high school assessments under subdivision 1A.
Okay, so I guess that's where my comment as a parent in the public would come in. With students older in high school who are going to be taking a college entrance exam, it feels a little bit silly to additionally have them spend time in school taking the MCAs as an 11th grader. So that was just my feedback. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify, or feel free to ask a question if you wish about the bill? All right. I don't see anyone else at this point. So, members, you're going to get 5 minutes to do what you wish today. And with that, I thank the committee for their thoughtful questions and dialogue, and we'll look forward to coming back to this in the next week or two. And with that, we are adjourned.